Science tells us that we are all made of five elements: air, space, fire, water, and earth. And all humans, not only humans, but also plants, birds, animals, fish, they're all made of the same five elements, the body, in different, you know, constituents, but essentially that is what every living being is made of, these same five elements, the body. And then the consciousness that enlivens every one of us, that we call as God, as Brahman, or life, is one. There is only one consciousness, one God, one Brahman, that we call by different names. You can call him Ganpati, Saraswati, Krishna, Shiva. You can call him Father in Heaven, Allah, Jesus, Buddha. But there is one consciousness that illumines. So if there is one consciousness that illumines all of us, and we are all made of the same five elements, then why this variety? Why this beautiful variety that we see in the world? Each flower is different from the other, each animal. There are so many breeds of dogs. And then in humans, of course, you know, not only the appearance, but the nature and the behavior and the attitude. And, you know, a saint and a mass murderer, you know, they both have the same consciousness. They both are made of the five elements. But what is the difference? And so this 14th chapter that we have done up to the first 10 verses, which I shall summarize when we start, the 14th chapter tells us why there is a difference. What distinguishes me from her or him or the man on the street? What is it that distinguishes every one of us? And here they call it as vasanas, but also it can be translated, not exactly, does not mean exactly the same, but in the Gita, in the 14th chapter, they call it the gunas. Gunas are the qualities. And they say that every human being is under the influence of three types of qualities, three gunas constantly. The sattvic, which is the pure, the knowledgeable, the peaceful. The rajas, the rajasic individual who is passionate and full of energy and full of desire and activity. And then the tamasic, who is the lazy, the ignorant. And all of us have the admixture of these three gunas, because of which our mind and intellect work differently. Even though we all have the same mind, we all have the same intellect, but the thoughts that arise, the emotions that arise in each and every one of us depends on the mood or the mood or the guna at of that moment. And that is what decides how I function in the world. So not only this individual may be sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic, where predominantly he or she may be very pure, very passionate, or very lazy, but also different times of the day, different days of the week, different years of my life. At one time I may be very active, and then as I grow older, I may become hopefully more spiritual, more. So just as the ground, if you find where there are four seasons, in the winter it's all dead and dreary, the snow, and there is nothing there, you know, if you have lived in the East Coast or in the Midwest. And then spring arises, and then you see the beautiful colors of the flowers. And then summer, you know, if it's raining, then there's greenery, and, you know, all the crops grow. And then in the fall, you see the leaves falling and the changing of the colors. The same ground, the same trees, the same appearance varies so much depending on which climate it is under the influence of. So gunas are like the climatic conditions under which my mind and intellect work. And that is what distinguishes us from each other, and also explains why somebody, you know, seems so spiritual and suddenly he says, oh, I never expected him to do that. How could he have done that? Or somebody whom we have no hope for, he's a criminal, and, you know, and then suddenly he turns his life around and becomes a great individual. We have so many examples in history. Valmiki was one of them, who was a criminal, Ratnakar, but when he met the right kind of guru, he became one of the greatest saints. So it is because of the gunas, it is because of the qualities, where a person who is under tamas or rajas could transfer himself or herself into a sattvic individual. So this 14th chapter exhaustively in detail goes into the very depth of what the gunas are, what is sattva, what is rajas, what is tamas, how it manifests in each and every one of us, what are the signs and symptoms of it, how individuals function under tamas, rajas and sattva, how we can uplift us from the lowest to the highest, and ultimately the end of the chapter, which is the most beautiful, I think that's one of the masterpiece few verses, is how we can go beyond the gunas, how we can go beyond this to the truth. And that is explained so beautifully in the last few verses. And also how an individual who has gone beyond, Arjuna asks Krishna, guna tita, one who has gone beyond the gunas, how does such a person function in the world? So that gives us a very vivid illustration of how the wise person works and how we can also move in that direction. So this is a brief introduction to the topic of gunas. What I'll do is I'll briefly summarize the first 10 verses of the 14th chapter. We had last done them in May. I'm sure you all remember them in detail. But if you don't, actually I don't either. I also don't remember what I said. So let us all together summarize and understand what we have covered so far. I actually had to go through last night and see what did I speak. So it's hard, you know, it's after a certain amount of time. So when this is the Chaturdashodhyaya, the 14th chapter, the Yoga of Gunas. So it starts with Sri Bhagavan Uvaj. So here there is no question from Arjuna. Straight away Sri Krishna, having covered in the 13th chapter, the Kshetra and Kshetragnya, as we said, the field and the knower of the field being this whole universe, and the knower being the consciousness, how an individual can evolve from the lower to the higher. And so he says in the first verse, Param Bhuyav Pravakshyami Jnana Nam Jnanamuttamam Yat Jnatva Munaya Sarve Param Siddhim Itogataha. So it says that now I shall tell you again, Bhuya, because he has mentioned that in different places in the Bhagavad Gita, but he says, I'll give you the jnana nam jnanam uttamam. I'll give you the highest of the highest knowledge. So you say, you know, every time he says the same thing, you know, highest of the highest. First of all, of course, Sri Krishna is, you know, is a very good speaker. He increases our interest. Oh, it is the highest knowledge. We always want, you know, we always want what is the best. You see, this is the best soap in the market. You know, everybody will go to buy that. So, or is the best drink, or it, so similarly, he says this is the highest of the highest knowledge. But then we have heard that the Upanishads have the highest knowledge, you know, the talk about who am I am that consciousness, aham brahmasmi tatvam asi. And here in the 14th chapter, none of that is covered by Sri Krishna. He has already covered that in the 7th, 8th or 9th chapter. But why does he say it is the highest knowledge? Because it is the foundation on which the highest knowledge stands. See, it's like if you haven't done high school and then suddenly you show up in a bachelor's or a master's class in university and you have never done high school and you suddenly show up in the college and then you start listening to the professor, he already assumes that you have done the basic high school or you have done the prerequisites, then only you have been admitted to college, but you never went to school and you suddenly show up in college, or you didn't do the bachelor's and you show up in the PhD class, you will be lost. So the preliminary school or the intermediate school or the higher school are all required for the foundation on which your higher education is built. So this higher knowledge of the Upanishads cannot be grasped by us unless our fundamentals are clear. They say, you know, get your fundamentals clear. So these gunas are the fundamentals, because once, if you are all the time in rajas and tamas, all the time agitated or ignorant, your mind is never pure or sattvic, you may listen to them, you know, Swamijis may come, realized masters may come, and they may talk till they are blue in the face, but nothing will register because your mind is clouded. It's clouded with, you know, ignorance, it's clouded with agitation. So through this knowledge of the gunas, our mind is prepared for the higher knowledge. It is the foundation. The foundation you don't see. All you see is the beautiful building. But if the foundation was not there, the building would collapse. So this knowledge is called jnanam uttamam because it is the foundation on which we can then study the Upanishads, or you can study the Brahma Sutras, or you can study the, you know, the other chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. That's why he says it is the highest knowledge. Yat jnatva munaya sarve. And the people who are munis. Munis does not mean a person with a long beard and wearing orange clothes. Muni means one who is a contemplative student. When he or she sits down, having acquired this knowledge, then he can go to the highest. When he says after this life, what Sri Krishna does not mean that you have to die to realize the truth. They say, how do I know after death who is God? And you're telling me after death you will realize, I don't want this knowledge. What Sri Krishna means after death, he means is after the death of this ego. Because we are in this constant realm of birth and death. As we know, like the, today it is daytime, and then the day will die and the night will be born. Then it is summer, and then summer will end, and then fall will be born, and then fall will end, and winter will be born. Winter will end, and spring will be. Childhood died, and then the youth came, and the youth died, and the middle age came. So we are constantly in this realm of birth and death, constantly. Certain ideas arise, and then they die, and new ideas arise. Certain concepts that I used to have, used to think the world is flat, and then now we know the world is round. So concepts keep changing. So when we talk about birth and death, it's not just the death of the body where the ultimate, but it is the death of each moment. So a person who has acquired this knowledge reaches the highest while living. And that he says in the next verse. So he says this knowledge, once you acquire, he says a person who acquires this knowledge comes to me. When Krishna says comes to me, it does not only mean that the flute player of Vrindavan, but Krishna at that time represents the total consciousness, the Brahman. He, we consider him as an expression of Brahman, just as they consider Jesus as the Son of God, that the Father in heaven expressed on earth as Jesus. So we say that the total Brahman or consciousness appeared on earth as Krishna. And for a Shiva devotee, it could be Shiva. For a Mother Durga, it could be Mother Durga, Ganpati. It does not matter, but as long as you worship that as the total reality. So he says, one who undertakes this knowledge comes to me, and sargepi na upajayante pralaye na vyathanti cha. As we said, we are constantly going through this realm of birth and death, but a person who has understood that I am that reality, that is my true nature. This body, mind and intellect is my equipment, but I am the owner of this equipment. So for such an individual, he goes beyond death. Even you can take away his body, you know, you can even crucify him, you can even poison him, like Mirabai or Jesus or, you know, all these great saints, how they were mistreated, some of these great Sikh gurus. But they have gone beyond death, even 2000 years after they have left this body. We still remember them. So they have gone beyond death. So that is number one. Number two, as we said, this world is constantly going through change, this world of change. But they are able to watch this world of change. And even them, their own body, my body is changing, my emotions are changing, my thoughts are changing, but I am changeless. So that is called going beyond birth and death. Even while living, the person becomes immortal. Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda left his body 22 years ago. And even today we remember him with so much reverence. And it's increasing. You know, the number of followers of Chinmayananda Mission are growing. Even this class is, you know, is getting bigger. Why? Because it is his knowledge. It is his grace that is flowing, you know, through all of us. So that's what these great Mahatmas do for us. Sarge no jayante pralayena vyathanti cha. And then Sri Krishna tells us in the third and fourth verse, how did this world come into being? Because he says, what are these gunas? So the in the individual, the gunas are called also as the vasanas or the ignorance or the qualities. It's a rough translation. It does not mean exactly the same, but approximately. But in the totality, what is the sum total of all the vasanas? Vasanas are the causal body which cause us to act. So the individual, you call it vasanas, the total vasanas of all the humans, all the plants, all the birds, all the fish together is called Maya. Maya is ignorance. Maya is also the creative power of the Lord. And the Lord says, I plant the seed, just as in a mother, the father plants the seed and then the creativity occurs, the child is born. So here also Sri Krishna says that it is my energy or my power that enlivens Maya, the way they describe in our scriptures. And also if you listen to the physics, where there was a grapefruit-like structure and then there was this energy of this big bang and then the whole universe emerged from that tiny grapefruit-like structure, how compact it must have been. So similarly, in our Upanishads, they say that the womb is very tiny, the creation, and there is a light of consciousness that penetrates, which they explain. The science doesn't tell where the energy for the big bang came. They say there was a big bang, but where did the energy come? Our Upanishads say that there was this structure where the light of consciousness penetrated. He says that also, that I am the one, it is my light of consciousness. And when that light of consciousness penetrated, there was this huge explosion. And from that, sambhava sarva bhutanam tato bhavati bharata. So, O Arjuna, from that original womb, from that original structure, when my light of consciousness penetrated, the entire universe came. Sarva yoneshu kaunteya murtaya sambhavanti yaha. And that is how this whole creation came. All the plants, birds, animal, fish, rocks, mountains, oceans, everything came. Coral, everything came from that one original source, where it was my light of consciousness. I am the one that illumined everything. Here again, what Krishna means is that Brahman, that total consciousness, it was my energy that penetrated and created this whole beautiful universe. And then he says, Sattvam rajastama iti guna prakriti sambhavaha. He says, so sattva we talked about, purity, silence, peace, rajas is passion, and tamas, it is laziness. He says these three gunas also came out of prakriti. Prakriti is the same as maya or the original matter. And these gunas are the creation, timeless. They have always been there. And they all bind us. You say, well, you know, tamas we understand, you know, being ignorant and lazy, you're bound. Rajas, you know, too much action, too much passion, you can be bound. But how about purity, intelligence? You know, silence, how can that bind us? That we don't understand, because we hear from all the Mahatmas that you should go from tamas to rajas and from rajas to sattva. Sattva is the highest. But they say, no, sattva is not the highest. There is something even higher than sattva. Even sattva can bind. And how is that? In the sixth verse he says, tatra sattvam nirmalatvat prakasham anamayam sukha sangena badhnati jnana sangena chanagha. O sinless one, how does sattva bind us? By purity. Even though sattva is of the nature of purity, light, and anamyam, healthy, it is very good. But how does it bind us? Sukha sangena and jnana sangena. Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary describes it very beautifully, like a person sitting in meditation in the caves in the Himalayas. And he starts so much enjoying that silence and that solitude. He says, I don't want to go to the plains. I don't want to get out. The moment he gets out of the caves and has to deal with individuals, goes to the marketplace to shop or to buy something or even bring food, and his mind gets disturbed. He says, I can't. I have to go back to my cave. So what has happened is that he has become so addicted to that silence that he cannot function in the world. It's like a lady, you know, who has to get up in the morning and do her puja or meditation. And that's very good. You know, I have to do it every morning, 6 to 6:30, 6 to 7, wonderful. But one day her child is sick or some emergency comes and she cannot do her meditation or her puja. And her whole day gets ruined. Oh, I'm such a bad person. I didn't do that. I didn't keep my discipline. So then what is happening is that that activity is binding you. Yes, you should do it regularly, sincerely every day. But say one day you couldn't do it for some emergency, you should say, oh, Bhagavan, theek hai. Oh, Lord, that was your wish. Today I had an emergency and I did my duty for my child. And please excuse me. Please forgive me. And then you move on. Or that saint in the cave, he should be able to maintain his quietude of mind, whether he's in the cave in the Himalayas or whether he's in the marketplace. That's what Gurudev says, that when that knowledge, if it does not help you in the marketplace, then that knowledge is no knowledge. Then you are bound only to that, only when I'm in the cave or only when I'm listening to Swamiji's talks, then you know it's very clear. But when the moment he leaves, then my mind becomes deluded. So then essentially what you're doing is you are getting bound to that sattva. It is good to be in sattva, but the person should be able to be in sattva regardless of what he's doing, even when he's working in the world. You look at Gurudev, he used to sleep only 3 hours a night and he worked 21 hours a day. But his mind was always centered on Narayana, Narayana. He was always, so no matter what kind of obstacles come, these Mahatmas never get disturbed. So that is why he says, sattva can also bind you. And in the 7th verse he says, rajas, of course rajas we all know because we are constantly in that. He says, rajas is of the nature of passion, ragatmakam vidhi, trishna sanga samudbhavam, and it is of the nature of thirst, intense desire. It comes out of that and it binds us by action, by attachment to action, because I constantly have to work. It's like a workaholic. I have to work, I have to acquire, I have to possess, I have to get more, and this person keeps on working till the last day of his death. Till the last day, all he is thinking of is money, possessions, power. Not that there's anything wrong in earning or working, but that should not be our only purpose in life. Our purpose in life is Om, it is Brahman, it is the Lord. And so, while I am working in the world, my mind should be on the higher. But such an individual who keeps working till the day he dies never accomplishes anything. He may acquire a lot in the world. You may think, oh, he's so successful, he has accomplished so much. But the scriptures tell us, if you have not gotten closer to God in this lifetime, then you have wasted your life. Human birth is so precious, it has been given to us to know God. And if you die without knowing Him, you have wasted your life. If you have not progressed spiritually, then you might as well have been born as a rock or a plant, because your life is totally useless. That's what I have understood. So if you want to call yourself a human, you have to evolve spiritually. Otherwise, that's why Gurudev calls them two-legged animals. They're walking on two legs, but if they are not learning and not evolving, then they might as well have just been living in the forest. Whether you live in expensive home on Seven Oaks or whether you live in a hut, if you are not spiritually evolving, you are wasting your life. And then in the 8th verse, Sri Krishna tells us, tamastu ajnanajam vidhi. It is born out of ignorance. And mohanam sarvadehinam. And it deludes all individuals. Because their mind is so clouded with ignorance and deluded that they just cannot think. Rajas at least has some desire to accomplish or do something. These people are just lazy. Pramada alasya nidra bihi. He says pramada means heedlessness. They just don't care. Whatever happens, you know, food, I have food or not, doesn't matter. I have a place to live or not. I have good clothes or not. He just sleeps wherever, eats whatever, and whatever he gets. And alasya, he's lazy. And nidra, he's always in sleep. And that is how such an individual is bound. And then in Sri Krishna in the ninth repeats this. He says, Sattva binds us by sukha, by joy. Rajas binds us by action, karmani. And tamas binds us by jnanam avritya, by covering our knowledge. And pramada. Pramada means heedlessness. Then we want to know, who am I? Am I sattvic? Am I rajasic? Or am I tamasic? Because this knowledge is given to us not to analyze our husband. You know, my husband, I think he has a lot of rajas. I think he needs to come to this Gita class. No, it is for me. It is for me. How can I improve myself? That is the whole purpose of this knowledge. Is that how can I evolve from tamas to rajas, rajas to sattva, and ultimately go beyond sattva to that state called om. So, this is like a diagnostic chart. So, Sri Krishna says, when are we in sattvic mood? He says, when sattva is predominant and rajas and tamas are minimal. Like you get up in the morning, you have done your prayers, you have done your meditation, and you are in a very peaceful mood and you are watching the sunrise, and then you stand and do your Gayatri mantra, and then you go in, and if you actually do that, you'll find that your mind is so peaceful. It's very interesting. Normally, you know, when I drive to San Francisco, you always have some CD playing or some, you know, talks or whatever. This time it was so interesting. I don't know what mood I was in, but I was driving alone. I left at 7 in the morning. And believe it or not, I did not play anything. Did not play a single instrument, did not play anything. And for 2 hours till I reached almost the Gilroy exit, you know, that where the 152. I said, 2 hours, how did it pass? I was in such a silence. It was like I was driving in that silent mode. And it all comes from, you know, from the Lord. And I was so thankful. I said, you know, and they said, oh, how was the drive? I said, I didn't even know. You know, otherwise people make such a big deal. Oh, 4 hours, leaving at 7 in the morning. I had an appointment at 11. It was so peaceful. So that is called when you're in a sattvic mode. And that time I was in rajas. I was driving. It was not I was stationary. But the car was driving and I was just watching it. It was such a beautiful. I had never had that experience. It was so nice. So that is how you know that when your mind is at peace. The more you meditate, the more you pray, the more you study, the more you come in contact with Mahatmas. You know, we have so many wonderful teachers who come. The more you do that, the more you will find your mind becoming quieter. The more you will be in touch. Not that I have reached anywhere. I didn't want, and I don't want anybody to have that idea. But the point is that 5 years ago or 10 years ago where I was, and that's what I was telling Vimalji the other day when he talked on Gurudev's birthday. On Gurudev's Mahasamadhi Day, not his birthday, but the Mahasamadhi Day on August 3rd. And I was talking to Vimalji and I said, if Gurudev had not come in our life, Swami Chinmayananda had not come in our life, where would we have been? How ignorant we were, you know, in the 80s and the early 90s before we met him and before we went on this path. We were so foolish. You know, we would think on Fridays, you know, whose house are we going for the party? Which restaurant and what is the food, and that was the only thing, and work and that all. There was no thought at all about this. So it is because of the action of one Mahatma, one Guru, that we are all here listening to these beautiful words. So that is what he says. When you are in sattva, then rajas and tamas are minimal. But when you are in rajas, when you are working, then you have to work. I'm not saying that you should be then sitting in solitude and saying, aham brahmasmi. No, I have to work. When I have to work, I have to work. But at the back of my mind, that Lord's name should always be there. I should always be in that silence, no matter what work I am doing. If I can do that, if I can work from with that, that's what we find in all these great Mahatmas, these great saints. That no matter how much they were working, if you look at Vivekananda, how he used to travel and what kind of problems he had, but he never forgot his true nature. You look at all these great saints, Guruji Swami Tejomayananda, if you see his schedule, the way he works, always so peaceful. You know, he's working, he's running around. So even when they are working, they can be in sattva. But here he says rajva, rajas is when sattva and tamas are the minimal, then you are in rajas. And then at the end of the day, when you are tired and ready to sleep, it's okay, you know, to go into tamas and say, okay, I'm ready to sleep. But there also Shankaracharya ji, very beautifully, he says, nidra samadhi sthitihi. In his Laghu Nyasa, he says it, no, in his Shiv Manas Puja. He says that even when you're asleep, your mind should be chanting the name of the Lord. You should be in samadhi. You should be one with that Lord. And how can that happen? Because the more you remember him throughout the day, the more he will be with you at night. And as I have said before, before you go to bed at night, just lie down and relax the body from head to toe, and then just observe your breath. And as each breath comes out, you chant his name. Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Shri Krishna Sharanam. So each breath when you take, as you sleep at night, chant the Lord's name, whatever it is, you know, Mother Saraswati, Durga, Jesus, whatever, chant the name of the Lord, so that the last thought in your mind is about the Lord's name. And when you get up, do not get out of bed, do not jump out of bed, but just stay in that silence and chant the name of the Lord. Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, softly, not mechanically, not like a, you know, like a mechanical, but think about the Lord's form, think about his qualities, and think about the beauty of the Lord's name, and chant. So get up in the morning. So when you sleep at night with remembering the Lord's name, get up in the morning, then your whole day will be spent in that. And then throughout the day, remember him as much as you can. So this was the summary of the first 10 verses. So I thought I would just spend a little time doing that.